built on the rock, the church doth stand. Well, that's the old English, isn't it? King James. But with me on Law and Gospel today, we have our good friend, Pastor Mark Smith, who is off. Where were you off to? Hawaii for 2 weeks? Or where'd you go?
I wish. No, we actually took my father-in-law up to his 66th high school reunion up in Dubuque, Iowa. We took him up there.
And did the other person show up?
They billed it as the final reunion.
Well, I would say so. I mean, how many were there?
Well, it had about 30 people. I mean, 25, 30 people, including like sons and daughters that like us that brought their folks.
Boy,
to,
you know, the 66. Yeah. And that was the high school reunion when he would have been about 16.
1948.
So, yes. Boy, about 63 years.
Yeah, we happened to be placed, seating-wise, just right next to the high school principal and had a nice talk with him. So,
how old was he, 110?
No, he's the new one.
The new one.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, Dubuque, you know, high above the Mississippi River, both evenings we were high above the Mississippi River, just beautiful, beautiful view of it.
Well, I have to say, we did miss you here, although... the first time, I just did it myself. The second time, Pastor Henry Gehrke came in.
Oh, that was nice.
Yes, he was had the opportunity. He can't make it on Tuesdays because he's in a Bible study.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he doesn't set his priorities.
Well, he's
properly.
An authority on hymnody, that's for sure.
Oh, no. He was very, very interesting. Today, for the next Sunday after Pentecost, the hymn selected is Built on the Rock, the Church to Stand. And I don't know how to pronounce even the name of the person who wrote it.
Nikolai Friedrich Severin Grundtvig.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's the best I can do.
Yes.
Four names.
Yeah, four names.
No, Germans all have four names.
Oh, they do?
Just like me, yes.
Oh, well, what are your four names?
Mark Stephen Homer Smith.
Yes. Wow. I didn't know that.
But actually, it's Homer Henry. It's hyphenated, but I just put an H in there.
So you got five. Yeah. And it probably was originally Schmidt.
No.
Oh, really?
As I understand. No, it was. That's from my dad's side. My dad's side was. I guess there was some English in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty long too, Tom Baker. Okay. I will read the first stanza, and we will take a look on it. Built on the rock, the church shall stand, even when steeples are falling. Crumbled have spires in every land, bells still are chiming and calling. Calling the young and the old to rest, but above all the souls distressed, longing for rest everlasting. Now, this is kind of interesting. I always like to see when the person died who wrote this, because it gives you a kind of a understanding of what was going on.
That would be 1872.
Yes, 1872. What would have been going on there where steeples were falling? I'm actually unaware of what would have been happening.
Well,
it was before the First World War.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty good on military history, but let's see. I think the Crimean War was before that.
There's hardly a time, though, in the world where, you know, the church isn't in trouble and there's persecution of some nature.
Yes.
Yeah, and depends on what area of the world. For instance, right now, if the Kurds wrote a hymn, you know, with their slaughtered there.
Sure.
Except for President Obama coming in and helping them out with air raids and bombs falling on ISIS. Yes. But this is a very, very confident hymn. Because even when steeples are falling and crumbled have spires in every land.
Towers, bell towers, that sort of thing.
Pastor Mark Smith is moving his hand up and down as though everybody on the radio can see that.
Well, I'm doing my gestures, see, just like it from a pulpit.
That's good. That's good. So even though the spires, and that's the tall part of the church, is crumbled, listen what it says. Bells still are chiming and calling the young and old to rest, but above all the soul's distress, longing for rest everlasting. This kind of reminds us of a teaching about the church that it never is going to
That's right.
end.
The very gates of hell will not prevail against it.
Yes. So I said in my promo that this hymn is not just talking about the church's buildings. What is the church that continues to stand even when the buildings are falling?
It's talking about Christ, built on Christ, the rock of Christ.
Yes, built on the rock. And the first time we hear of Jesus being a rock is when, in the Old Testament?
Well, it's Matthew 16, well, in the Old Testament. Of course, when Moses struck the rock.
Yes.
And outgushed the water.
Exactly.
And Paul makes a statement, that rock that followed them was Christ.
Yes. And he's not referring just to the physical rock.
No.
But it's kind of like one can say that bread and that wine that comes into our mouth is Christ.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes. Christ isn't the bread. He isn't the wine. It's kind of like that burning bush.
Right.
And that burning bush was Christ.
That's right.
So we have a sacramental understanding of the church. A lot of people don't realize this, but there's a lot of Lutherans who aren't going to heaven. And there's a lot of non-Lutherans who are going to heaven. The Lutherans who aren't going to heaven are those that are called hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they don't believe in Jesus, but they pretend for various reasons. Perhaps that they want to give a they want to get their wife mad at them or something, or their parents mad at them, or
they don't
maybe
want to lose an inheritance or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well said, well mm-hmm. said. Yeah, I had a Jewish family. I made a mistake on this, and they came and they wanted their child baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you're Jewish. Why do you want your child baptized? And they said, because Grandma in California will not put us in the will unless he's baptized.
Hmm.
I refused to do the baptism. Next Sunday.
I bet you regret that.
Well, next Sunday.
Because you can you blame the child? I mean.
Well, next Sunday at my Sunday school, I was telling.
Uh-huh.
And one of my members said, no, Pastor, what you should have done is had the grandmother be the sponsor. Because she was Christian.
Oh, huh? No
yeah.
kidding.
Oh, and you are correct. I regretted that. I tried to get back in touch with them, but I didn't know where they lived in the
mm-hmm,
area.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was pretty good on your part that you knew the child should have been baptized.
Well, you know, God works in strange ways. He's his wonders to
yep.
perform, and he can work through maybe selfish motives.
Yes.
To
in fact,
bring
I often
child
said that I don't know anybody who ever came to the church for the right motive.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes for business contacts.
Or they just, they weren't coming to worship Jesus. They were coming because they had problems in their family.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted that, maybe. Or they weren't able to control their children.
They wanted a place to park their kids on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's another.
Like that.
Yes, exactly. Well, would you go ahead and read stanza two, and then we'll look
surely,
at that.
Surely, in temples made with hands, God the Most High is not dwelling. High above earth, his temple stands, all earthly temples excelling. Yet he who dwells in heaven above chooses to live with us in love, making our bodies his temple.
Boy, I really like that last part. He chooses to live with us in love. In other words, that's referring to the incarnation.
Right. Right.
Yeah, where he decided
sure.
to become a human being
mm-hmm.
For the purpose of bringing us into salvation. Because the penalty needed to be paid, but it had to be paid by a human being. In Revelation chapter 5, a strong angel says, who will open up,
yes,
the seals?
Yes, the seals.
And he can't do it.
Right.
Because he's not a human being.
Right.
And then he looks and he says, one,
The Lamb.
The house of David.
Right.
The tribe of Judah. And that, of course, is referring to Jesus. And Jesus appears in Revelation 5 as a slain lamb.
Right.
And then in Revelation 4, they had given worship and honor and glory to God the Father. Then in Revelation 5, they give the same words, the same worship, honor, and glory to
Christ.
The Lamb. Yes. And I often say, that's my favorite chapter in the Bible, Revelation 5. And I often say that's really a way of looking at the ascension.
Yeah, that's the other side of the ascension, the heavenly side of the ascension.
Yeah, exactly. That
it is beautiful, beautiful chapter.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've never seen a movie on the book of Revelation. That would really, they could do it now with all the...
Yeah.
You know, the dragons and things like that.
But would they get it right? That's the question.
Yeah, and that would be hard to get it right.
They'd have to have it Lewis Brighton as a consultant, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Lewis Brighton wrote the book of the commentary on Revelation.
Right. Oh, he's excellent.
And it's found in the Concordia Publishing House. And part of the problem is that I never could preach on the book of Revelation, even after the seminary. Because when you go to the seminary, you only... go through about four books, five books maybe. Romans I did, and even there with I had Dr. Franzman, he only got through chapter 5 in 10 weeks. So
you had Franzman?
Yes. Oh, yeah, wow. Martin Franzman was an excellent professor. And in fact, the new Bible study here with Pastor Whedon is entitled Thy Strong Word,
yes,
which comes from the hymn written by Pastor Franzman. So... if you're at all interested in that book, you know, you can contact Concordia Publishing House, which is the official publishing house of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And their number is 1-800-325-3040. There's a lot of commentaries now they have out, not all of them yet, but they're working on it. And that's where you can get the commentary on Revelation.
Right.
Okay, I'll read... stanza 3, which is interesting because it talks about what God's house really is. We are God's house of living stones built for his own habitation. He through baptismal grace us owns, heirs of his wondrous salvation. Were we but to his name to tell, yet he would deign with us to dwell with all his grace and his favor.
Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them.
Yeah.
Were we but two for him to do it.
Exactly. Now, one of the things we like to do is, if you're going over this with your children, there's words here they never use. And the one I'm looking at is near the end of that stanza. Yet he would deign with us to do it. What does that mean?
Deign. He would presume?
In a sense.
Presume, not in a presumptuous way, but...
a humble way.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would deign with us to dwell. He
condescend,
would make a decision.
Condescend to dwell? Or maybe that's not...
Yeah, that's a little more negative.
Yeah.
But it would be the concept that he would choose to dwell with us in a state of humiliation. Because, of course, he leaves his so-called rainbow-encircled throne and becomes a human being and then humbles himself by, at times, becoming hungry, becoming tired, and then also, of course, declaring that he would die, which God would never do. And that's called a state of humiliation. Do you ever remember a time, because I don't, where Jesus ever became ill? Like, he never talks about him having a headache.
He gets tired.
Yes.
He gets, and he sleeps.
Yeah.
He's fully human, except
That's
for
right.
sin.
Yeah.
I've thought about that before. I can't think of a time when he was ill, no.
But the closest I get to it is in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah.
Where he really...
he's sweating drops of blood.
Yes.
And falls on his face.
Yeah. Father,
in fact, the angel, he had to be strengthened by an angel.
That's right.
Some say he might have even died that night if the angel hadn't strengthened him.
I believe that's, you know, to remove this cup is he was saying, no, don't let me die in the garden.
Right.
You know.
But on the cross.
But on the cross, which was something the Father.
It says he was extremely sorrowful even unto death.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And that's what he asked God to strengthen him through so that he could go to the cross. Talk about love. Had he died in the garden, well, that would have been pretty nice. You know, have you ever thought how you want to die?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, my
how would you like to die?
The way my dad did, My mother was driving to a wedding, and he was sitting beside her reading. He always liked that, and she would always drive everywhere. And he went, and he expired.
And that was it. No kidding.
Yeah, and she even took us to the corner where she had to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a number who died in a at sleep. That would be okay too with me.
Sure.
You know,
or you like to die. Yeah, that'd be okay.
Yeah.
Pretty easy transition.
But unfortunately, here we had one of the Preusses, Clement Preuss, who died in the hospice.
Right.
And that took a long time, and there was a lot of he had pain, and and you just wonder. Now, God permitted that because he had the faith to get through it. I remember it was Pastor Harrison speaking about visiting him once.
Yes, I read about that too.
And he got a call from his sister. And as they were growing up, they were always trying to do one over the other.
Yes.
And Pastor Preuss, now he could hardly move and such. If he needed some water on his head, he would ask his wife to do it so he could speak. But he's talking to his sister, and if I recall what Pastor Harrison said, is that, well, sister, I've got one over you. I'm going to be in heaven before you. And they both laughed about it. But that's faith. That's faith to understand that. And you know, people say, I'd be able to get through that. No, you right now, like, for example, I tell you, I don't like pain. And I've also often thought if somebody came in and said, deny Jesus or we're going to, you know, cut you or something.
Cut your fingers off one by one.
I think I'd deny him immediately.
Oh, boy, I'm sure our listeners like to hear that.
Well.
No, I know. You never know. Hey, you never know if you're tempted like that in time of persecution.
No.
You like to think that you're faithful unto death and that you wouldn't hesitate to profess him. But, you know, I'm like you. I don't like pain either.
No.
You know, if you're undergoing excruciating pain, I'm always amazed when I hear about these people that were, like John Huss, that were burned.
Oh, I know.
Can you imagine being burned to death like that? I mean, talk about excruciating pain.
Well, where's my hope here?
That you die peacefully.
No.
In your sleep.
The fact of the matter is, what we've discovered, even Christians who were thrown to the lions, there appeared to be a spiritual adrenaline that God gave to them.
Uh-huh.
And so the promise I always look to is I'm never going to be put into a position of suffering or temptation beyond what I'm able to endure.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I feel the same way.
And you and I don't...
Because, you know, you would hate to be a poor example to your flock.
Yes.
You know, that here... You know, your flock is looking to you for an example of courage, and you know, you sure wouldn't want to have to deny Christ because of pain.
No. So what I believe and confess is that God won't put me in that situation unless he gives me the strength to do it.
Right, exactly.
But you don't have that strength all the time. You aren't on a high.
No.
You don't have that spiritual adrenaline unless you need it. It's like, I'll remember that. A woman was driving with her child in the car, and she had an accident. It flipped over, and it was on his legs. And she lifted the car.
Yes, I've heard of that. Yes,
you see,
I've heard of that.
Now, there's no way she has that strength. You know, if she was going to a weightlifting contest, she couldn't lift any of that. But because of the adrenaline within her. So there is a spiritual adrenaline.
Sure.
So even though I think any Christian said, "Oh yeah, I can get through that," you know, that pain.
No,
at the present time, I don't think I could. But God won't put it into my situation, into my experience, unless he does give me that spiritual adrenaline. And it's just amazing how the martyrs of old.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, I just really appreciate.
Like Bartholomew was flayed alive, skinned alive. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, no.
I mean, according to tradition.
Yeah, right. Well, remember, all but John were martyred.
Right.
Yeah. And all right, would you read stanza 4, and then we'll look at that.
Here stands the font before our eyes, telling how God has received us. The altar recalls Christ's sacrifice and what his supper here gives us. Here sound the scriptures that proclaim Christ yesterday, today the same, and evermore our Redeemer.
Now, this is really good Lutheran theology.
Boy, you aren't kidding. Word and sacrament.
Yeah, how has God received us? It doesn't say, here stands my works before his eyes.
The font.
The font.
Baptismal font.
So how through the baptismal font are we received?
Well, through baptism. It's nothing that we've done. We've been carried, chances are, as infants.
Yes.
And that's how we were welcomed into his church, is through the washing of the water and the word.
The verse doesn't say, he that believes and does a lot of good works will be saved.
No.
He that believes and is
baptized
shall be saved. Now, by the way, that comes from a section of the Bible that a lot of people don't think is really part of the Bible.
Yeah, Mark 16.
But if you're having trouble with that, all you do is go find out what Jesus says is the Great Commission, and that is by baptizing people. And then Romans 6 is so clear that what happens in baptism is as though you get buried in the grave with Jesus. And so God uses baptism as a means of grace. And he also, what's the other means that's talked about here?
It talks about the supper.
Yes.
And the scriptures.
Yes. And that's what you just said. It's through word and
sacrament.
Yes. And the sacrament in and of itself is nothing but ordinary water, ordinary bread, ordinary wine. But when it's connected to the word.
His promise, yes.
Yes, his promises. So God does use these sacraments to bring people to faith. And that's just really amazing. Okay, why don't you read stanza 5 as the last one, and we'll take a look at it.
Grant then, O God, your will be done, that when the church bells are ringing, many in saving faith may come, where Christ his message is bringing. I know my own know me. You, not the world, my face shall see. My peace I leave with you. Amen.
Yeah, that really came home to me this week. We haven't talked much about the Ferguson situation here because we're waiting till all the facts.
Right.
And we don't want to jump to any conclusions. But there's certain things that are happening there. One of them is that this, I believe it was a Baptist church, got broken into during the riots. And they had to put boards up and such. But what they had on Sunday, they continued to worship there.
Right.
And their prayers were that peace might come to the neighborhood.
Sure.
And that people would be patient in letting justice take place and this sort of thing. That's, you know, where the faith of the Christian comes through. They didn't come to church and say, God, why did you do that and mess up our church and such like that? No. When steeples were falling, they still kept on. And I don't know if they had church bells ringing. Do you ring bells before your service?
No, we do not have church. Now, my first parish out in the middle of Missouri.
Oh, yeah. It's
a rural parish, 150 years old, and we had church bell that rang. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
And they had the practice, too. When somebody died in the congregation,
oh, yeah,
you would toll the bells the numbers of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. And by the time that finished tolling, people would throughout the whole countryside would know who that was. See.
We had the Carolyn at the Caroline Bells at the seminary in St. Louis.
Yes, 49 bells.
I remember when I was, Dr. Martin Charlin was a member of my congregation, he died.
Yes.
And they tolled the number of years he was.
Right.
I'll never forget that. Yeah, so that's kind of a... was it a bell at your first parish where a man had to pull down the rope or something?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a number of the congregations, I was at Hope Lutheran last week at St. Anne preaching Saturday and Sunday, and sure enough, that's how they did it. That was the sign for the pastor to come out, was the bells were ringing. So,
I remember that church I was in, it just shook, you know, just vibrated with that bell.
Oh, yeah. Now, a lot of the bells today are part of the organ
kind
of thing. They're not really part of the bells.
Or electronic.
Even though you don't have bells, I think we should still encourage people to come to your church. So tell us the worship services, the times, etc.
Yes. 5 p.m. Saturday, we have the service at 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. 8646 New Sappington Road. We're just south of the Watson-New Sappington Road intersection. We'd love to have you. Do visit us.
And, of course, your Bible studies at what time?
Bible study is right after the church service on Sunday, about 10:30.
Well, on tomorrow's Law and Gospel, we're going to, because Chris Ann is coming in on Thursday, we're going to have Wes Reimnitz come in on Wednesday, and we're going to be talking about an item sent to me by one of our listeners, 10 Keys for a Blessed Church. Till then, God bless.
You can write Pastor Baker at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. We are the messenger of good news, KFUO.